Football on Off the Ball.
My favourite goal. If you think of a goal where the first touch makes the goal, Bergkamp against Newcastle. What a touch.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.
Hello and welcome to the Koi Gig Podcast. The WSL season is back. Ireland have some very important playoffs coming up in a couple of weeks' time. And of course, we are back with another season of the Koi Gig Podcast to bring it all to you. Kathleen McNamee here, if you can identify that from my very croaky voice. I was at a wedding in Italy over the weekend. Shout out to Jen and Will. Congratulations on what was a fantastic event and also on the rest of their lives. But yes, if my voice does give up at some stage during this podcast, you will know why. Joining me, as ever, is the one and only Karen Duggan. Karen, it's nice to be back.
Back. Yeah, it
we're
is.
Back.
It kind of crept up on you. We were kind of spoiled with a bit. Obviously, we had football during the summer, so this wasn't long coming around, but it has come back with a bang, especially transfer-wise. I think we'll get into it later, but big money moves.
Big money moves. And it just seems to be like every couple of weeks, one transfer record is being broken and then all of a sudden another one is being broken again. So there's definitely lots to talk about. We were fortunate enough to have tournament football this summer, despite the fact that we weren't there. How did you find the experience of watching it and how did you feel about the result in the end?
How did I feel about the result in the end? Well, I was like a Spain stan from the start, just because entertainment value and getting to watch that kind of pure football. You know, we sit through a lot of difficult games as Irish football fans in the men's and the women's side.
I don't know what you're talking about. I loved watching the under-21s last night. There was no other match on.
Armenia is not, it's not a country that exists. We have to just pretend that never happened. Yeah, that's for someone else's podcast to get into, because
we have other things to talk about. But
we have happier things to talk about.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, in terms of like the story and the WSL and what England are bringing to the table and winning this tournament in a completely different fashion, you know, just getting those dirty wins and getting over the line and it being kind of like a mentality win more than like your purest in football sense wanting Spain to win. But yeah, there was some really big games and obviously France hit the ground running. We were all getting really excited about them and then France are France and, you know, it all went away. Obviously with Germany thinking they do a lot better and they didn't. Some really good moments from the likes of Switzerland, which you love to see from the hosts. So overall, I think it provided exactly what we wanted it to. It was entertaining. It was tense. And yeah, there was loads of talking points, which we obviously love.
Some concerning moments, you would argue, as well from Belgium, considering we're facing them in a couple of weeks' time.
Yeah, I was impressed by them. I think particularly their strength up top, we're going to need to be really, really solid, have that back line nailed down, prevent crosses into the box. So I think Carla Ball might need to change back to, you know, I was such an advocate for changing from the five at the back, but a bit of realism needs to set in as well. They were at the Euros. They performed quite well and they played to their strengths. They will have a lot more of the ball than they had in some of those Euro games, but they showed enough in those patches for us to think, okay, let's get to work. Let's get to work tactically and recognize their talents and recognize our limitations. There's still a huge chance for Ireland like to do well here, but we need to be very realistic in our approach to that game and not think we're going gung-ho, just put out a 4-3-3 and the girls will know what to do. There's going to be a lot more to it than that, particularly over a two-leg game.
Yeah, well, you would hope that that lesson has been learned over the last couple of months, considering some of the results. But then again, it's Irish football. As we saw last night with the men, you can never really tell where things are going to go. I wasn't going to mention the league at home, because I know that's been a tricky time at points for your lovely P-Mount. But there has been like a lot of things happening. Athlone, obviously, at the top of the table. They're playing in Europe at the moment. Colin Fortune has just stepped down and there's lots of different things happening behind the scenes there. So it has been a really interesting time for the league here as well.
Yeah, really interesting. Obviously, the top two are the top two yourselves in Athlone. It's kind of as we expected. No one has managed to break through this season. Again, there's always transitionary periods. We're hoping Galway might come through, but again, it's all this changeover happening. Ourselves, like you look at the table and you think, God, they're having a stinker of a year. But if you look at the, if you actually look at the games, we've played quite well. And again, we're definitely in a rebuild. You know, that has to be acknowledged. And over the last four or five games, we've been getting some points on the board, and you know, we're building for next season, you know. So everyone has different priorities at this point of the season. Athlone have to spread their priorities because they have a chance of winning a very impressive double and are doing so well in Europe, representing the league so well. So that's why the Colin Fortune thing just feels so bizarre, you know. And obviously we've seen his reasons in the paper. He's given an interview. It's he said, she said at this point, between him and the board, and you know, things get lost in translation sometimes, and it's bizarre. I think if I was in that position and I was being selfish and I had a chance to be in my first season, bring a team as far as they can in Europe and potentially win the double with 5 weeks left, could I park the rest of it? Maybe I don't have a strong moral. He does,
Yeah.
but
Well,
like.
just for people who haven't like followed the story, basically his argument is that he asked about what his contract situation was going to be for next year because he felt like other teams were coming in to look to take players, or players were having discussions with other people and he wanted to plan for the year. He was told that they weren't able to do that at the moment. And then also that he felt like there was going to be an involvement of the executive within the actual running of the team, the like team selection in the dressing room, training sessions. Now, some of the executive has since come out and said that's not what we meant. We said that he came looking for help and we offered to give that help, but not actually being involved in the room itself. And then on the side of the contracts, it was a budgetary issue where they're trying to sort out what their finances are for the year. So they just couldn't commit at the moment. So, as you said, a bit of he said, she said, not sure where things have got lost in translation just yet, but that's like a general overview of where both sides are kind of laying their ground.
He also mentioned like trying to type players down with contracts. I'd like to know how many players are on contracts there. You know, are there? What is the professionalism within Athlone? How is that being managed? Like, it raises a bit of a question there when you're talking about contracts. Obviously, we know that Rovers have done it in a really good way, where they, you know, the structure's in place, and we want that to spread amongst the league. If they're doing that, it'd be great to know what they're doing. I just thought that was an interesting comment. But look. I think Athlone will be able to park it. I think that there's too much at stake for them over the next 5 weeks. They have a lot of experience within their team. You know, they have a lot of girls, and because they come from outside of Athlone, you know, they're not as, maybe sometimes they're not as emotionally charged with these things. You know, he's an Athlone manager, he's from Athlone, supports the club. And if you were really caught up in that, you know, it could affect you. But they've got a lot of
He did
girls.
kind of almost admit that as well in the interview that he gave to the Westmeath Independent, where he was saying like because he has such a tie to Athlone, the fact that he hasn't been backed exactly the way he wanted kind of complicated the situation for him a little bit.
Yeah, look, it's interesting. But I think obviously the more interesting story, and what should be the more interesting story, is the fact that if Athlone get a result against Glasgow, a team that, you know, Pima, we played against them a few years ago. We were very unlucky. We lost on penalties. Obviously Glasgow are in a more professional setup, but obviously, we don't know what it's like down in Athlone because they do have contracts. They do have a lot of girls who they've been able to bring in from elsewhere and stuff like that. So I don't think there's going to be a huge gap between them. I think there's a real chance there. And obviously, if they do well, that opens up a door for a second team in Ireland to, you know, go into Europe, which would be huge because we know that it's going to take all these things. It's going to take clubs' inward investment and clubs doing well in Europe to help our league, because we know of the financial situation going on in the FAI and where the limitations are there in terms of progressing our league. We know that a lot of it is up to us. And as hard as it is to support rivals, this would be a great thing for the league if Athlone can go and get a result against Glasgow.
Yeah, so they're playing. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 10th of September. This is September now. Yes, it is. Had to think about that one for a moment. I was like, are we still in August? They're playing tonight at 25 to 8, and then they'll have the return leg, which is away on the 17th of September. So that's next week at 7:30. So it's a two-legged affair as well, which is good because at least they can kind of, I suppose, suss out the situation tonight and they'll know what they need to do next week. Hopefully not too much. Hopefully they'll go in and get some sort of a result tonight and it'll be a lot easier. And you never know, like sometimes these situations of losing a manager, it can be the making or a breaking of a team. So we can only hope for the sake of Irish football that it is the making of the team. Speaking of European glory, we didn't have a podcast, I don't think, since Arsenal became
old news.
League winners.
It's old news.
It's not going to be old news. I'm literally just going to refer to Arsenal for the rest of the season as Champions League winners, Arsenal. Champions League winner, Katie McCabe.
I mean, that's a tagline we want to have on an Irish player, isn't it? Like a Champions League winner. It's huge. It's huge for Katie. It's huge for Arsenal. And it has to be the thing that spurs them on to go that step further against Chelsea this year, because Chelsea, you know, they did kind of saunter their way through the league a little bit last year.
Oh, and that they totally did.
Set, you know, Arsenal and I guess Man City to have not done better. And then you think, oh, maybe Chelsea will start to ease up after five, and then they come in with bang bang signings, you know. And the thing that they've always been better at than your Arsenals, than Man City, is the squad depth. Mm-hmm. And it is still the defining thing. Arsenal have added, certainly, especially Olivia Smith, I'm sure we'll chat about her. You know, they have added, they have retained players who we would think, you know, that start on 90% of the other teams in the league. They've retained them. Slager has the dressing room, so there's a very good chance there. The Chasers, City, United, same story, I think, the squad depth, unfortunately.
Yeah, I did think it was interesting. There was a photo posted, I think it was yesterday, on Instagram, and it was that they'd got their like squad photos done yesterday, and it showed the Arsenal squad whenever, I think it was from last season or the season before and this season, and you could see how much the squad has shrunk to now. Now, I would argue that the squad is a lot more purposeful now than it was then, and like there was definitely players there that didn't need to be there. But I did have that slight fear just with Arsenal's injury profile in previous years that it could be something that will come to haunt them a little bit later on in the season. Just because they do pretty much have a setup there where they know where players are going. You've lost someone as experienced as Leah Valti over just the last couple of days, who's decided to move on, and she was part of the senior leadership in the squad. But then you would think that that's an opening for some other players to come in, like Cooney Cross. There's kind of a lot of people saying that that's going to be a good opportunity for her to make a stamp on the team in some way. But yeah, it was interesting seeing the side by side, because it was a very obvious difference in squad size.
Yeah, it is. But I think you're right. I think the only way it comes back to haunt them is if some of the defenders get injured. You know, they've Ruben Moy on the bench, and obviously they signed Taylor Hines as a backup in a fullback position. But outside of that, is it a little bit light? They've plenty to come off the bench to spring into action from the attack. You know, look at the bench the other day. Mead set up two goals. Manham scored. Laxenius scored. Caitlin Ford is Caitlin Ford. I mean, that's a really, really strong bench. It's like you say, if it's further back the pitch, if, you know, Kim Little has to be at all managed, like she's obviously still going absolutely brilliantly, so strong, but just back up there, Caldente, you know, she's a very forward thinking player. It's in those games where they have to park up a little bit if they are missing that cog in midfield, or, you know, Katie Reid came in for Williamson, obviously centre back, beside Steph Catley, who's only been converted into a centre back last year. That's the only area of concern there, the six and the two centre backs, should anything happen to any of the current players that are playing there.
Mm. I know it's kind of difficult to watch the games because of these consecutive time or consecutive kickoffs, because they're all starting the same time, so it's hard to like watch them all in one go. But there is one thing before we get into the actual games that I want to get your thoughts on, and that's the halftime interviews.
Oh, you're right there,
managers.
You know my answer. You know my answer.
I know, but I want the sound bit card, so.
That's, you know, managers can shout in on the pitch, like, grand, you're in the heat of the action. Do you actually take on that information? Maybe like 10% of it. You need the time, especially if you're not on top, you need the time to change things. Mm. You know, we saw with Everton at the weekend, they brought on three subs at half time.
Yeah.
You have to communicate set pieces. You have to communicate a change in formation, all this sort of stuff. You need them to be in a calm space to actually transfer that information. If you're spending 5 or 6 minutes outside doing a silly interview trying to analyze one half of football when you don't know where the rest of the game goes, any sound bit you get, it's going to be very generic. Oh, look, we're going to try and change this in the second half. We'll go forward. That wasn't a great half. It's going to be so generic. It's not going to add to anything. And an interview during the match is 10 times worse. Bin it immediately. We are not in America. We do not. This is not something we need to see sneaking in. Obviously, the support from Sky Sports is amazing. And the highlights that they're putting on afterwards and the dedicated time to the women's show, brilliant. Don't reinvent the wheel.
Yeah.
We like what we like. We're simple people, football folk.
I know. I think it's this like continued attempt to get access. And I've seen like they do it in rugby as well in the URC, I think. But what they do is they interview like an assistant coach or something. So it's not. But even that, I'm like, surely you have a responsibility, you know, if you're
to be fair, TG Carr,
at the defensive or the forwards.
TG Carr, I've done it at halftime in a couple of our games as well. And I do understand it. But I don't like it.
We'll see how long it lasts, because there were a few managers.
Post-match interview, grand, but I just don't think we're going to gain anything. Like, it'd be great to see an absolute meltdown from someone. I think that's the only way it makes it
work.
Someone absolutely goes off on one, but...
Well, I think it is interesting, because they did use some of the injured players. So, like, Lucy Bronze did one during the Chelsea game mid-match. Leah Williamson did one during the Arsenal game mid-match.
Do you remember what any of them said of interest to do with the game? Nothing.
Like, very, very little. And you're obviously not going to go up against your own team and, like, pressure manager. Oh, my God. London City.
Yeah.
My mind went totally
I'm gonna let you pronounce
blank there.
Pressure.
I was like, who is the new one there? They did an interview at halftime and then they just like gave off stink about it afterwards. They were like, this is just an absolute waste of my time. Like, I have other things that I need to be doing right now. Okay, we shall get into some of the games. We'll start with the first one of the weekend. And we retreated initially to a fixture of Chelsea City, which is like a massive fixture to give a very big standout for how the rest of the season is going to go. We chatted a little bit about the signings during the summer. Chelsea is just like link after link to like the best players in the world. And you're like, where is this money coming in from? Not that I'm want more regulation of the league, but I'm like, can someone regulate Chelsea somewhere along here? The money they're spending.
Says an Arsenal fan.
Yeah. Oh yeah, purely. I'm doing this purely for my own benefit.
Yeah, Arsenal didn't make a statement like Chelsea did. That's the one I would say. I know they've got some depth there, but they certainly haven't made a statement. They're back in their current squad, and I don't know if that's the way they wanted it or if it's just to do with funding. But I didn't see the Alicia Thompson one coming. I mean, to me, that's huge. What a name to get into the league so young. I think it shows where the WSL is and where people's mindsets are compared to the NWSL. I think it's absolutely massive. So she'll have a big part to play with Chelsea. But I think in terms of the game, one of the new signings as well was the talking point. I think that Ellie Carpenter absolutely tore it up. She's the type of player I would hate to come up against, just that directness, that speed, direct, like never stopped. She looked like she'd been there for a long time. And with Lucy Bronze out, it's going to be pretty seamless transition. It takes a lot of pressure off Lucy Bronze as well, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
It's someone saying, you know, in terms of the longevity of her career, you know, she always plays, but now she doesn't have to always play.
Mm-hmm.
And I know maybe she won't like that because of the mindset she has, but in terms of prolonging her career in Chelsea, who will be involved in probably four competitions for this season.
And she might need it considering all the conversations that happened after she admitted to the injuries that she was playing on during the Euros and the pain she was in. I do wonder because there was a bit of backlash to that. There was people that were like, oh, fair play, she's tough as nails. And there was other people being like, you should really be putting yourself in that situation. Like, you should feel able to step
up. They had lost, particularly after the first goal that England conceded against Spain, where she was caught flat-footed at the back post. If they had lost that game and that came out, all hell breaks loose.
I don't think she would have admitted it.
Yeah, well, look. Yeah, hindsight's a great thing. Anyway, back to the game. Man City, very good football, loads of shots. Not quite as clinical as we expected them to be. And Chelsea are Chelsea, and they took advantage of it. And like all the talks about Sam Kerr being back from 20 months out, obviously it was such a long stint. People chant him to get her on, but that's not a game you bring someone on, because it was pretty close. Like, Man City created quite a few chances. And I don't think they need to, because with Beaver Jones up front, she comes alive in the box. She is as instinctual a striker within the box as you will see in the league. And at her age, I think she is going to be just a mainstay there for years and years and years to come.
Yeah, I think between the Euros, and I know it's so early on in the season to judge, but I think we were definitely starting to see glimpses of it, particularly in the second half of last season, about what she could do. And she was kind of being used a little bit as that impact player off the bench, but I do think she's the sort of player that could develop into the we need her in the team. Like, she's not just an impact player.
I think so. There's versatility there. I mean, she's kind of like, you're in the box. You've got Macario, who can run a lot. We know what Sam Kerr can do. It'd be just interesting to see if she can regain that form. They have now added Alyssia Thompson. I think that adds a new element. If you have Alyssia Thompson coming in off the left and you have Carpenter overlapping someone like Kaptein on the right, Chelsea, we saw, do a lot of long balls. Now I think they can go shorter and drive, and it adds another element to their game. Now, in saying that, they weren't seamless against Man City. You know, like, Greenwood hit the post, Bunny Shaw, I think, on another day, right after the Chelsea goal, equalised. Yeah. That was an unusual miss for her. She kind of hit it straight at Hampton. Hampton made herself big enough. But look, yeah, it's a marker, I guess, for Chelsea. It's one of those ones that you just have to get over. If you have to look at that fixture later in the season and you don't know what's to come, it's a tricky fixture to get that one over and those 3 points on the board this early. Yeah, it's huge, huge for them.
I know we were kind of saying towards the end of last season with Chelsea in particular that they were struggling a little bit, just in terms of a lot of the players looked tired. They'd all played a lot of football, high intensity games, but like, they were still able to grind them out. Do you think with the signings that they've brought in this summer, those new big names, the kind of development of the likes of Aggie Beaver-Jones, who I imagine is going to get more responsibility this season, that's not going to be as much of an issue for them?
I think it's important that they get Girma back. Just the way that Millie Bright was talking just about, you know, her physical and mental just being drained last season. She has to face into that again, and, you know, a lot of pressure on her. I think, like Arsenal, if something happens to that centre-back pairing, if Girma comes in and is fit and is flying and shows the promise that we know she can, as the original of the last year's record signings that has now been broken about 4 times, I think they'll be okay. But that's my one question mark again, is just the centre back. We saw Neve Charles scoring an OG. Bjorn is there, you know, good player, but they're not like a marquee backline the way we would have seen when they had like Eriksen there and the likes of that. So that's a hope for some people. I think that the backline can be there to be got at a little bit, and I think that's reflective in the fact that Man City had 17 shots against Chelsea. But it's how many teams will get opportunities against them, because they will dominate possession so well. I thought that Hamano was excellent as well. Kaptein, you know, Walsh had a good game. So, yeah. And yeah, Man City, like, they show promise as well. It's very hard to say where they are. I think that time will tell with them.
Yeah, I'm interested about City this season, because obviously there's been the manager shakeup, and that did happen before the end of last season. But, you know, there wasn't proper time to bed in or kind of develop a squad. But I don't know if they've made those kind of big name signings in the transfer window, and do they have need to make those big name signings as well, considering you have your Bunny Shaw's, your Mutimas in there, like maybe defensively. Alex Greenwood was substituted towards the end because she picked up an injury, which would be an absolutely devastating blow for them if it was something bigger.
Yeah, well, we saw Bene during the Euros and she was amazing for Switzerland, but she's a kid. So it'd be a lot of pressure to put on her to come in and light the WSL up. But I mean, we know that she has a lot of talent. I thought that Lohmann in midfield was excellent. I think she was a really solid signing for them. Then you had some Murphy came in and she was good. Now, maybe she didn't give as much defensive cover against Carpenter as Greenwood possibly needed. And again, is that on Greenwood being left back as opposed to centre back? I'm not sure. Lauren Hemp was off the right for a long time.
Yeah.
Mia prefer off the left, but obviously they let Chloe Kelly go and whatever happened there. After leaving her go, I think it would have been a statement to go after someone like an Alicia Thompson. Now, they had injuries, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
Leading into this game. What's the Brazilian girl's name? That's deadly. Can't think of it now. But anyway, they have players to come back, which is good. And they did put it up to City. So the manager can certainly take positives from the game. But yeah, same old Chelsea. They don't have to be the better team on the pitch to win.
I know. It's really frustrating. Okay, well, then we will move on to Arsenal and London City Lionesses. Obviously, London City, this is their first year in the WSL. There's been a lot of talk about them over the summer because of the signings they've brought in, the fact that they're owned by Michelle Kang, who does not seem to be afraid to spend the money on bringing in the big names, but that's not also necessarily a sign of definite success. And there's maybe some of the names that she's bringing in are big names, but people are on the later stages of their career. You know, you look at Nikita Paris, Aslani, Alana Kennedy, Rolfo went to them as well, didn't she?
Rolfo's United.
Oh, sorry, that was United. Yes, sorry, I am incorrect. But, you know, like those sort of names who have maybe developed a little bit on, and they just weren't quite. I think Arsenal's bench really performed for them in this game. And
yeah,
there was a lot of excitement in general about Olivia Smith and seeing her get a goal and seeing Chloe Kelly get a goal as well, because she became such a fan favourite whenever she came over from Manchester City. But it just felt like those substitutes really kind of pushed Arsenal across the line.
Yeah, they did. But just to go back to the Olivia Smith goal, I mean, it was incredible. We saw her a lot for Liverpool working off the counter-attack, you know, and we know that she has that pace and power in her locker. But it was nice to see her pop up on the other side and she just shrugged a defender off. So if anyone is missing their Sam Kerr fix, I think there's shades of it in Olivia Smith, which is a terrifying prospect again at 21 years of age. Arsenal were well worth their win. But at the same time, up until the 83rd minute, London City were 2-1. They were well in the game. They were robust at times. And they did look to go forward. It wasn't that they were naive either. You know, I think sometimes people like Crystal Palace came in, they maybe tried to play a brand of football that, you know, they weren't naive in that way. They knew they were up against a stronger opposition. But I think some of the signings, just getting the WSL experience, I can understand why they did it. Because, you know, like that, to stay in the league, you can't just count on young, talented players. There has to be a bit of nous and tactical nous to be able to come up against better teams. Yeah, a little bit of a reality check. But then there's some excitement there as well, because and you've also just signed someone who is not at the latter end of her career, someone who is bang smack in the middle of her career and is world class in Gioro for,
yes, of course,
a rumored £4 million, which is obviously the record signing. So you add one person like that into the mix in terms of, I know Aslani was talking about top four, but in terms of one step at a time, staying in the league and making sure you stay in the league, I think that could even be enough, and that's a huge thing for Michelle.
Massively. I look at London City as a longer term project. I don't think this is a season where I expect them to do anything spectacular, and if they do, that's like icing on the cake for them.
It's on a smaller level, not being associated with a men's team in terms of building the brand is a little bit harder. So a lot of that is going to fall just on success. and Michelle Kang and people just loving what she's doing at women's sport. And I would like to see people who maybe aren't affiliated to a team, this would be the perfect team to get behind, because I think they will go places if they get that backing. But yeah, in terms of staying in the league, too early to tell, but the intentions from their owners is certainly there that is, anything less would be unacceptable.
Yeah, no, it definitely seems like that. And I do think they're only going to put more and more money into the team. And they also don't have the issue, as you said, because they're not affiliated to a men's team of
restructuring like everyone else is becoming.
Yeah, exactly. The team being sold off, or else like money not being funneled into the women's team because there's some issue with the men's team or whatever it might be. So that is a positive. I mean,
they're not united. Go on to say it.
Yeah, exactly. But we've seen it with other teams as well. Like, it came up with Aston Villa as well during the summer, Everton too. So like, it is a common problem across the league, and one that I think is only going to get more and more prevalent, depending on how things go, and especially if the league starts expanding and more teams are coming up. So
it just goes to show like how at the mercy a lot of these women's teams are of the men's. Like, it's a means to them getting away with certain financial fair play rules, and that doesn't make you feel great as you know, as part of the club. And it's different with Chelsea because they're being given the backing and they have the success to sustain themselves nearly independently. But with other teams, you'd wonder, the likes of Villa, you would wonder.
Yeah, it'll be very interesting to see how it plays out. And I'm cynical about how it will play out, but I think I have every right to be cynical. You mentioned them there, your beloved Manchester United, off with a bang.
Yeah.
Some very nice goals. Always good to get different people on the scoreline as well. Names that we've talked about before, your Ella Toons, a little bit Turland, but also nice to see Melvin Mallard as well, getting twice on the score sheet.
And that's the thing, like, that even though she scored twice, there's a couple of chances that you just think, God, she's just that little, you can see why she's the sub for the French team as opposed to the starter. It's just those final moments in front of goal sometimes, but in flashes she can be unstoppable, you know, when she's confident and when she moves the ball quick. And we saw that in this game. Obviously, worrying signs for Leicester. Maybe we just put it down to Man United being good. But a very difficult start for Leicester. Obviously, just to acknowledge that Ella Toon, after 13 minutes, you know, she scored a goal on her dad's anniversary. Lovely moment for her. And, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff with Man United and how they don't get the backing and the Skinner questions and all that, they do seem like a very together group, and that is the only thing you can put down. Their dressing room does seem very together, and that will get them to a certain point, but it won't get them challenging with Arsenal and Chelsea.
We were talking about squad sizes earlier. Does it worry you that they only had 5 subs on the bench for this game?
Yeah, of course it does. One of them is a keeper, right? So you're talking for, I don't know Griffiths well, Millie Turner, obviously we know, sub and centre-back, Naslund, solid player, and Jess Park, who was in the door about 20 minutes. And 3 of the 5 came on. The Jess Park, Clinton swap, what do we say about that? Only in women's football, right?
Yeah, it just didn't make any sense to me. At all.
Not that I actually really rate Jess Park.
No, so do I. But I was just, I would say
is Man United have form of letting all their best players go and getting absolutely nothing in return. I think we've got a quality signing in return, and someone who, you know, she's not as maybe robust as Clinton can be in terms of those defensive positions, but what she's going to do, and I think the link up she could have in the middle, I think she can be really, really effective because she's that kind of buzzy player. Like, I do think she fits the Man United style quite well.
But I just think you should have just been like spending the money to get her rather than swapping out one of your players who's like been.
It would have made a statement if they said, we'll give you the contract you want, Clinton, and we'll get Grace Park to play in front of you, or Jess Park to play in front of you. Like, that's a statement. And Man United once again have gone through a summer without making a statement. And this was a good result. We won't get too down on them just yet. It's just, you get a little bit green with envy, and you'd be the same with Arsenal.
Oh, yeah, totally. You heard my rant about Chelsea already, about wanting them
to
put, like, spending right. regulations on them.
But they got Olivia Smith, you know, a 21-year-old prospect who is world class. We've got a good solid squad team. I won't say squad. We've got a good solid team there. But like I say, it's not going to be enough to compete with Chelsea.
Yeah.
Turland, I had said it before we signed her, because having lost Russo, for me, she was a very good replacement, because again, she's an instinctual striker and works very, very hard. Mm. And she's shown that in preseason and has carried it through now to the start of the WSL, which is encouraging.
Yeah. I think, as you said, the worry would just be that making the statement, spending the money, and also the general depth.
We just never know if we are Team Skinner. I don't know if we will ever.
No, I don't think we ever will work it out. Even when he leaves, like you say his name and I automatically think, no, I'm not. But then I also know that he is dealing with like insane restrictions within United, as like I'm sure most teams within United, whether you're a senior or an academy stage, are. It's just his attitude or something. But no player has ever really come out against him. And I don't think that's for fear, because a lot of big name players have left in that time. You're like Katie Zealum, whoever it might be. It's all seemed to be about the general system of the club. And maybe that's just because the club is so bad that anything other than that is like, oh, this isn't that bad. But yeah, as a person that I do not know and have never met, I don't know. There's just something about him that puts me slightly on edge. But that's what I'm allowed to say as a football commentator, you know?
Yeah, we don't have to have facts to back anything up.
No. Podcasts? Facts? What?
Yeah, no. They don't go hand in hand.
Yeah. We'll go over to Anfield and... very impressive result against Liverpool for Everton, and has to be like all the credit given to Vignola for what she did in this. Like 20-year-old, just moved from Granada. Obviously, Granada has like great Spanish footballing history, but it's not really that established in a women's context at all. First Everton player between the men's or the women's teams to score a hat trick in a Merseyside derby for 94 years. The last one was Dixie Dean, which everyone will know as an iconic name. Great Sligo Rovers man as well. He came over and played with us for a little bit, so we'll always have a loyalty to good old Dixie. But what a debut. Would you say it was the debut of the weekend, considering she did it in Anfield against a team that was probably expected to be Everton?
Yes. Absolutely. And the fact that she dragged them through that first half, because by rights, like it was a game of two halves. Liverpool dominated a lot of the first half and they had some great chances, but they have a corner and Vignola breaks but what a goal that is. Because I think it was Holland was tracking her and she did quite well. She slowed her down, but then she cut back on her left and just unleashed one into the top corner and gave the keeper no chance. And that just kept them in it, you know, and they hadn't played well up to that point. And then they started to get into the game towards the latter ends of the first half. And then Liverpool just switched off in the second half. And it looks like she is not someone that you can allow any space to. Pacheco, also a very good debut for Everton. She provided the assists firstly for the Snoice goal, scored on the 49th minute. What a terrible time to concede. And going into the dressing room,
about conceding at that time.
Yeah. But going into the dressing room, like, that's the manager interview you want at halftime, isn't it? Because it just puts a different complexion on things. And it gives Everton just like something to feed off. And I think obviously a lot of credit goes to Sorensen, who made three subs at halftime. But enough about that. The story of the game was Vignola. Like, it was a great header as well. Obviously, she got a bit of luck with the deflection for the third. But you'd have to say she deserved it, because to do that on your debut, it was just spectacular. And we talk about all the big money signings and everything that went on. Is it time for Everton to come good, or do they just raise their game against Liverpool?
Well, I feel like before January last year, there was like a lot of concern about Everton, and like there was talks around potential relegation because they had so many injuries to so many key players, and they've let go a few key enough players over the summer as well. But the one thing that Sorensen has proven that he's good at doing is getting cost-effective people in who are able to do their jobs very, very well. Like, you know, we talk all the time about someone like having Courtney in there because she is so good. She could probably be a goalkeeper for like a lot of the teams towards the top of the table. And he's managed to keep her in there. There's a couple of the French signings that he brought in January last year that just gave them an automatic boost. And all of a sudden you're like, yeah, no, they're a solid mid-table sort of team. They're going to be okay. And I think he's done it again here with Vignola and bringing her in because 20, or like so young, only 20, has proven on one of the biggest stadiums in the country in a like really high intensity derby match that she can pull it off. So, and I know like Liverpool have had their own issues over the summer and like chops and changes even towards the end of the season, but you still would have expected them to go into this game and give something to it. So I'm very curious to see how she does for the rest. I really, really hope it's not just a
one hit wonder
this season. And yeah,
I don't think so, because she plays with confidence. You know, she had no pressure on her shoulders. She went at Liverpool when she could. She was strong in the box, strong in the air. I'm rooting for her to do well. I think I like Sorensen as a manager. Liverpool. Do I like Taylor? What do we think of the Taylor appointment?
Still friend of the pod, but former team of the week, friend of the pod, Emma Carroll, who is a Liverpool supporter, basically just blagged a lot of my messages whenever I asked her what she thought about Gareth Taylor coming. And I've had similar responses, or maybe not suitable for work responses, from other Liverpool fans about bringing Gareth Taylor in. Look, he was a controversial figure at City. I think the way he left with the Chloe Kelly situation probably didn't put a lot of faith in him in general. And I think with a team like Liverpool, because, not that they should, because Liverpool's one of the biggest clubs in the world, but because they don't really get the funding that they should to bring in players, I do think there is a little bit of, I don't know, worry that will he be able to deal with a smaller budget, because he's so used to being at City and actually being able to go out and spend money on these big name players that are proven and experienced.
The only thing is, on the flip side of that, is that City sign a lot of young players with the view of developing them, and he has been in the league for long enough that could he do well in the loan market with the younger players coming through? And that's not what Liverpool should be doing. I think they should be investing in their own players and doing that. But if things aren't going well come January, could that put a little bit of a plaster over things for him? Be interesting to see.
Yeah.
Just experience, does that dig him out a little bit?
Yeah, that will be interesting to see. I have my suspicions that it won't, but I'm just being, again, a bit negative at this very early point of the season. There was two other fixtures from the weekend. So Tottenham 1-0 against West Ham. Once again, another young player in the Tottenham game, impressing. Toko Koga, only 19-year-old, making her Spurs debut and very much helping them keep that clean sheet in that game. She was really, really central, I think, to that match.
Yeah, wasn't exactly, you know, a classic. But Spurs, you know, they only added two players, and there's shades of last year where they're persisting with playing out and played themselves into a little bit of trouble. And West Ham, you know, they had more shots. Spurs had more possession. It was kind of a game that could have gone either way. Obviously, then England pops up and gets the penalty. But for Spurs, remember, they were going through patches where they'd be part of these classic games where there was goals and goals and goals. So a clean sheet on the opening day of the season, that'll be very, very satisfying for them. And it's something that they need to maybe concentrate on instead of, you know, the nicey-nicey football. I'm not sure that they've got that talent to be going at teams like that. West Ham are kind of the same, kind of played themselves into a little bit of trouble at times. And obviously they had a very poor season last year. So again, no early signs that there's going to be a big turnaround at West Ham.
Yeah. And then final game was Villa nil, Aguiman. Brighton is just Aguiman now in my head. Yeah, she's just the team. Brighton nil. Obviously, they did a good job of keeping her quiet. I think this game to me felt very much like a start of the season game. Two teams that weren't, I think it was like 2 or 3 points they were separated by last season, almost kind of feeling each other out a little bit. No one making any great big statements, but also no one taking any great big risks as well to get that big statement win. And probably just the sort of game you'd expect from these two sides on an opening day.
Yeah, exactly. Obviously, Brighton had that really good start last year and they kind of like lit the place up a little bit. This didn't give signs that that was on the way. And I think for Villa as well, they need to steady the ship a little bit after being backed so like brightly last year. Everyone's afraid to kind of say what they'll do this year. I think, again, it's screaming to lower table.
Quick early predictions. So who is going to win the league?
Chelsea.
Who's going to be relegated?
Leicester.
And who do you think is going to be the standout player of the season?
That one's tricky. I'm between Smith and Thompson. I obviously haven't seen Thompson play at all, so I'll go with Smith.
Okay. Yeah. We'll replay these back at the end of the season.
I'll be busy.
Karen, thank you very much. We will have more people joining us over the course of the season. Scarlett Heron is going to be back. We're also going to have some special guest appearances from some familiar faces that I think you will all know. So do stay with us for the rest of the season. I promise I will have no more weddings or festivals to go to in the coming weeks. So I'll hopefully have a better voice for you all to listen to. But the Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball is brought to you by Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland women's national team. Karen, thank you very much. Enjoy the rest of your week and we will see you after next week's fixtures.